Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the AI Boardroom. Today with a special guest, and to tell you more about it, Svetlana, go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, guys. Welcome to this episode. Really excited to have another guest on our show. Mike joins us to talk about some fun stuff in recruiting specifically. I think we're really excited to actually bring you tangible examples for how AI could be applied in specific parts of the industries across business verticals. And Mike comes from a vast amount of background in recruiting, so which he'll talk about in a second. And so we'll start at a high level, just talking about Mike, what he is, some exciting things he's been doing in the field. He's published a book, just a quick little preview that he'll talk about, and some tools. Then we'll kind of get his expertise opinion about where the industry is headed with AI. And yeah, there's going to be some fun things at the end. So stick around. And should we dive in? Mike, do you want to jump in and kind of give us an introduction on who you are and kind of what brought you into the recruiting in the first place?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for that kind introduction. My name is Mike Wolford. I spent about 20 years in talent acquisition. Like everybody, as a young child, I grew up dreaming of being a recruiter. Like everybody else, I fell into the profession, but I really enjoyed it early on. I got to help people find a job, and that wasn't necessarily the point of what we did, but at the end of the day, my candidate had a better job, my client had the person they needed, and I got to get paid. And I was like, everybody wins here. I feel really good about doing this for a living. So I enjoyed the profession early on, and I started to be a writer and contributor probably about 8 years into the profession. I've spent the last 12 years writing for Recruiting Daily and SourceCon, which are two publications in my field, and speaking on topics in recruiting, but not super intensely, like once or twice a year, a couple of maybe 8 to 12 articles a month or a year. It wasn't an intense focus of mine until I came into AI. After I left Twitter, I got into analytics and artificial intelligence, and I started to watch an expert. His name is Dr. Alan Thompson. He's in Australia. He was the head of Mensa International. He is a PhD in research's area of expertise is human intelligence. And about 3 years ago, he switched to artificial intelligence, and I came across his interviews with the AI, and he was automating his interview with a AI avatar. So it looked like he was actually having conversations with the AI, and I thought it was brilliant. But I also thought it was brilliant. Like, wow, the AI understands and can respond like appropriately. And sometimes it was, out of line, and he would call it, be like, that's not true, or like it was melancholic or overly negative, and he would call that out. And I thought that was really interesting too. Like, he wasn't trying to hype it, he wasn't trying to downplay it, he was just trying to show it for what it was. And but I understood then that that was an aha moment for me. Like, it's conversational now. It may not be perfect, but it's conversational. And by the time GPT-4 came out, I had interviewed it myself and done a similar thing. And it was competent in answering questions about the field that it had never been trained on. And so that's when I got the idea. I was like, well, let's see how far I could push it. And I tried to get the book. And I've written two books before. Full disclosure, I do have ADD. It does take me a long time to get writing done, and there's a lot of typos, and it's a process. My editors are champions. They earn their pay. But I wrote the book in just over 2 weeks from blank page to sending it to my publisher. Whoa. And the editor came back like a day or two after submittal and was like, this is a waste of my time. Like, the only thing is wrong is maybe I kept the prompts that I had to write the book in the book itself. So there's like typos and grammar mistakes in my prompting of what to tell the AI to do. Yeah. But in the responses from the AI, there wasn't a single grammatical error. There wasn't a typo. There wasn't a spelling mistake, nothing. 74,000 words, perfect, right? Like,
but wasn't your book about how to prompt the system, how to write? So it was intentional that you've included the prompts. You didn't just it wasn't an oversight.
That was an aha moment for me too. It was like, what's really valuable is not the fact that I could do it. It's the fact that I could teach other people how to do it, and then they could take this and do their work with it. That was the second, that was the real value to me.
So it's also
I could get AI to write content.
It's also kind of a meta book, right? Like write about what you're writing, basically.
How to use it to get all of these different. And the thing is, like, I'm an old recruiter and I'm a sorcerer, and I have been writing about spam. Like, our profession is notorious for just spamming people with jobs, right? Doesn't relevant. And I'm like, please don't just use this to automate your spam. Elevate, don't automate. Because now, like, a lot of us come from different fields and professions where we were very creative types. And like, now you don't have to just sit there and write an email saying, oh, I love your resume. You could say, hey, write this like a country song and add some emojis. Mm-hmm. Or I'm talking to a software engineer, put some code in there that would make a Python developer giggle, like an inside joke for them. Use industry lingo to reach out to these people. Like customization. I remember when I was in college, my professor said something oddly profound. It stuck with me. He said, the 20th century was defined by mass production. The 21st century will be defined by mass customization.
That's so true.
That is to me what AI actually is. It's a tool that allows for personal and mass customization. That's part of why it has such an impact. But also for context, and I know we're just getting started here, so I'm going to end with this. But for context, so we understand about volume of what we're really talking about, if you take everything in human history that was written in 2022 all the way back to the very beginning of time, in 2023, the AI not only wrote more, it wrote 20 times more content than has ever been created. This is the speed at which we are moving now.
And I think there's a lot in there. Let me start first with something I was seeing this week. Like I think it was released 2 weeks ago. It was an AI coding interview with an avatar. And first of all, the questions were hard. Like I was like,
right?
Like, I'm a senior developer. I should be better at this. Any other senior developers I've seen on YouTube were like, okay, that's really hard. But a lot of questions also got like, they lacked context. Like, for example, like, what would you do to assume the best possible database? But it was not, there was no info what kind of data you actually have, like, that kind of stuff. So, how did you approach your solution? Because you have like built basically actively used systems for recruiting, right? How did you approach the solution?
So this is to me somebody who's an engineer but not a practitioner building a solution because it gave the programming but not the examples. And an example would say what type of data set would qualify it. And that's actually the missing key for most of the tools right now. Mm-hmm. They're built by engineers who know how to set instructions to a machine, but they've never had the capability maybe or the necessity to also combine those instructions with examples. And it's the two in combination that actually end up giving you the consistently good results. When you have a system, it's really frustrating because I don't know if anybody has read Pippi Longstockings or something like that before, but it's like completely literal. And so you do it and you're like, it did exactly what I said, but not exactly what I wanted. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the place where examples come in, because that's where you can say, this is what I mean by it. And when you have those two combined, that's the solution.
And I think what you're talking about, just to bridge the gap for the audience, is the intent. And so capturing intent behind user queries or any systems, honestly, I think the in AI, it's hard to do. But and then there's a lot of work previously done in natural language processing. I have some experience building tools as well, where capturing intent is actually really, really hard because you need context. You need to understand where the person is navigating from.
And you need
what information
sense.
Do they know? I'm sorry?
And you need common sense. I think that's also
common sense.
It's an important part of the point. Sorry. Yeah.
No, I think it's an important point, and I think it's understanding where they are in their journey too. Kind of navigating, because if they're just kind of logging into a system and they're trying to get a response about something, or they're three queries in, or they're like deep into their workflow and they need, again, common sense too, also needs to be part of that. But contextualization is really hard to implement. And I think, again, as you mentioned, just kind of connecting with what Mike said, examples are so crucial to provide context, but then also to provide common sense as to like, okay, I know you're going to take my literal instructions and follow them, but this is actually what my intent is and what my outcome needs to be based on these examples. And I love that you kind of are bringing that, those things into the conversation.
Thanks. Yeah, that's a missing piece of the puzzle right now. And this is the interesting thing. They've kind of turned us loose and there's no instruction manual, right? There's no like, here's what you can use it for and here's how you get it to do, like everything
because
else.
Because they don't have one, right?
Like, right, exactly.
No one has. But like we have approximations and we can get near to a like consistent system, but we are not there, maybe will not get because we don't get what the AI is actually doing. So
right. Somebody explained it to me like, what if dogs invented us to take care of them? Like they would not understand what a job is, they wouldn't understand what money is or That's how we one. Get it to feed them. But they just know that food shows up, right? And that's kind of what AI is doing to us. To me, the other analogy I like is like we're moving from the digital stone age to the digital bronze age. Mm-hmm. Like our ancestors used fire. They didn't totally understand it. They didn't understand chemical reactions or energy or any of that, but they used it. And it's the same thing with us in AI. Like we're like digital fire. Like AI is digital fire. We don't understand it, but that doesn't mean we can't use it. But it's also dangerous, right? Fire is also dangerous. We have a long history with fire for good and bad, right? And AI is the same sort of thing, except this is the fire that can light itself. Oh, this is the Gutenberg press that writes the books. It doesn't just print them.
I think that's something for another discussion, because I think we have still a lot of things we can take from the AI recruiting space.
For sure.
So I would love to reiterate my previous questions. Like, where did you get started? I think you told about the professor you met but where did you actively in your day-to-day use started using AI to do active recruiting challenges? Like, how did you get there?
Yeah, can I just maybe layer on the question that's like, because a lot of the listeners would probably be like, what problems exist in the recruiting space? And then what problems were you trying to solve with AI? I think those would actually also spark ideas as to, okay, I incur that in my day-to-day, or I've heard that happen. And like, that's an awesome use case. So, and I'm really excited to hear about like the tool that you've developed, because you've showcased it to us. And we're like, oh, not all the listeners would be able to see it. But if you can walk us through, again, the problems that you were trying to solve, and just kind of talk us through kind of the reasoning and what you've come up with, because that I think people will benefit from hearing it.
Thanks. So for me, when I got into AI to start, I was afraid of it making decisions. I didn't want to start there, but I came across some research that said, you know, 30 out of 40 hours of a recruiter's week is actually spent doing administrative work. And I was like, I believe that. I was a recruiter. I believe that. And I started to look at how I could get AI to do that type of work for me. Like, how could I get it to do the type of work that was eating up all my time with administrative work so I could free up the time to do the value add work that I want? Because if you're a recruiter, one thing that you know is you get evaluated almost solely on how many people you place. And so all that administrative work is really just slowing you down between you and your objective. And that's your performance rating. So it's really important if you can give back that time. So I started looking about, you know, I've been trying to teach people to write outbound emails for years to little effect. Spam is still a problem. But AI actually can be a solution here, because one of the things that recruiters are trying to do is they're trying to get enough people in enough time, and they don't have the mental time, the physical time to write 30 customized emails in a row. So in lieu of that, they send one email to 1,000 people and hope it hits the right people. With AI, they can actually not only target better, but actually take the time to say, hey, this person mentioned that they like Star Trek in their profile. Let's mention that in the outreach email, right? Like, and then that's all you have to do is give it the instruction. And then the creativity in the writing of the email, the AI takes over. And instead of taking 5 minutes to write an email out and think about it and how you want to do it, it's right there and it's done for you. So to me, that was like, okay, this is a win, right? Like I can actually get either more high quality out in the same time, or I can do the same amount of, get the same amount of result that I'm looking for in the end game, because I get a higher response rate from custom outreach than I'm going to from spam. And I could take that time difference and I can invest it in something else. And to me, what AI is exciting about is from several perspectives. One, for me as a recruiter, I want that administrative work gone, because the work I like doing is being a counselor and an advisor and an advocate for my candidate, and an advisor and a consultant to my business partner, my hiring partner. That's the part of the job I like. And so to me, that's the pitch of AI. Is the pitch is it can take away, and what I was looking to do with it is to take away the low-hanging fruit, the stuff that's monotonous, the stuff that we have writing job descriptions, candidate summaries, and you know, trying to convince the hiring manager that this person's a good fit for this job. Right now I have the AI do it. I take my interview notes, I take the resume, take the job description, and I say, okay, based on this person's resume and my interview notes, create a table with the must-have requirements on one side, and then how the candidate's experience lines up to it on the other. And you're thinking, Mike, that's pretty obvious. That's not done today. No, because as a recruiter, you'd have to do that 10 times a day. And like nobody has the time or the patience or the attention span to do 10 of those. But if you have an AI and it can do it, all you have to do is give it the instructions. And then 10 seconds later, you get the output. Anybody can do that. And that's a better thing, because another part of that process most people aren't privy to is the discussion between the recruiter and the hiring manager that goes on. The recruiter says, I like this candidate, I want you to interview him. The hiring manager says, no, they don't have the required skills, right? And there's this back and forth, whereas it's a lot harder for the hiring manager to say no to an interview when the recruiter says, here's all the requirements and here's how this candidate aligns to those requirements. This is exactly what you told me you needed, and this person aligns. Now it's much, much harder to say, no, I don't want to interview that person. Mm-hmm. So it's a better for the candidate. It's better for the recruiter. It's better for everybody.
And I think, can I just summarize also, because I think we've talked previously about the opportunity mapping. I plan to do a little bit more, maybe in the future episodes, deep dives, maybe with Edgar. But you basically chose high benefit, low cost things that are repetitive in your business. If you tackle it, they're not as complex to actually implement, but they provide so much value to the organization. So the ROI is truly clear. And I think what you're kind of even talking about, just to bridge the gap to the solution you've built, because if I'm not mistaken, you kind of did all of that kind of back and forth work that currently happens between the conversations between the hiring manager, the recruiter, as to, is this candidate even suited for this particular job? And then you have basically a report that is customized or hyper-personalized basically for the role and the candidate and their likelihood of being the right person for the job. And so the decision is still a human decision, but I thought it was really intriguing how you, and maybe you were going to go into that next, and I'm stealing your thunder a little bit, but I thought it was really fascinating. And I think I'm now connecting the dots, and thank you for, I just want you to kind of mention that it was really, really smart for you to pick these repetitive tasks and, yeah, I think bridge the gap with a solution. It sounds like you were able to roll out.
And let me add to that. I think one point I would love to point out is you chose an approach which is like hardly but are deeply connected to language understanding. Like a comparison is basically like language understanding. Understand what is like, because you have a skill set on the one hand and you have a resume on the other hand. They are not like exactly aligned. They like you won't find the same skills you need in the on the resume. So I found it really good. Like that's what I say. Like if you have tasks that involve language understanding, you pretty much set to at least challenge it with AI. And also the really practical approach. Like really really good work on that. I really quite like.
Yeah, and that's where I took what I learned from writing the book and what I learned from building products commercially. Like we built an AI analyst And I put those together to create an agent for myself. And so now that I'm speaking and doing presentations and I'm doing all this writing, I now have my own AI agent who's programmed with my way of writing, given examples of how I write, and can now, like, I wrote an article about 3 weeks ago about spam. Spam is dead, long live spam, right? where I was trying to get back to the community about, like, hey, now you have this new capability. Please don't just make the problem worse. You know, and I believe, please take like 5 seconds and then just gauge a little bit of creativity. And I think that's the other thing, like, I would ask across professions is, don't just take this as a chance to automate whatever repetitive task it is you have to do. You're a creative human being. You've been at whatever it is you're doing for a minute. You've probably thought there's a better way to do this. Now is your opportunity to try it, right? At low risk to yourself. And if it works, share it and be the hero, right? Because this type of opportunity to disrupt so many different types of business functions simultaneously is unlikely to come again. So, you know, don't just use it and be like, oh, I can use it for A. Be like, how can I make A even better if I do it this way? Because to your point, it understands. If you give it examples and instructions, it'll get what you mean.
And I think I was just going to add, it takes skill, even for me who uses AI on a daily basis. I use lots of these chatbot agents and other tools. But it takes skill to even get started, but then also identify use cases for what AI could be suited for, even these ChatGPT type of tools. Because I even catch myself every now and then, and I'm like, oh, I need to like read through. I was like, wait a minute, why am I doing this work now when I can upload this document and ask for it to summarize? I was just doing some research around like a company, and I pulled an annual report, which I have an MBA, so I know how to read them and what information I'm looking for. And I started flipping through the pages, and it was 124. And like halfway through it, don't ask me why halfway, but I was like, why am I doing this work? At that point, I just downloaded the file, uploaded it into ChatGPT. But I feel like it takes time for you to kind of get accustomed to just trading tasks to right. ChatGPT or AI. So yeah, you may have freed up time through these repetitive and automated workflows. But I think the best way to get started is to start delegating things that you would commonly do on your own and ask the question, is this something that I could delegate? Again, there's privacy and other concerns that you have to keep in mind as well. But like, is this something that I could just ask ChatGPT to do? Yes or no? I mean, like, if you're not happy with the output, then just go do it on your own. But start building that skill. I feel like that takes a little bit of time for you to even identify the right things to delegate to ChatGPT or other chatbots.
Yeah, that's part. So I've been laid off of my job. And so part of what I'm doing is I'm actually having a boot camp where I'll train people in my profession how to build these tools for themselves, because that's kind of the next skill is, yeah, you know how to use it. And now you're getting good at prompting it to do your emails and write your LinkedIn posts. And that's cool. But like, to take it to the next level and really get the benefit of it, you have to be able to understand the prompts and then be able to put them into one of these GPTs. And if you can do that, you create a really powerful tool for yourself. Now, in recruiting, what will happen is even more powerful because we have API access to CRMs and ATS systems with candidate information. And so in the not too distant future, you're going to have recruiters who have an agent like mine, an AI recruiter agent connected to their applicant tracking system, connected to their client relationship management system. And they're going to be able to pull information directly out of that. And that's when you're going to get the email that says, you know, remember when we said we kept your name on file, and if anything else came up, we'd call you? Surprise, something else came up, right? Like, that's always been a polite way to get rid of people, right? Like, hey, we'll keep your name on file, and if something else comes by, we'll call you, right?
And someone / something cared about what, what you
but were. That information actually goes and is saved. Companies do save it. And the problem is today, like, if you have 1,000 candidates in there, the search results will only bring you the top 100. So the bottom it's not their fault. They just can never access that. Whereas if you API to a system like that, the AI can access all the records and it's going to be able to go back. It's going to find your old application. It's going to find you on LinkedIn or wherever today, update your information. It's going to say, oh, is this much of a match? Here's the information from the last time you interviewed. Put together an outreach email. Hey, remember how we said we'd keep your information on file? We did. And we have a new position that might even be a better fit for you than the one you interviewed for before.
It's also,
and here's the details.
It's also giving like competitive advantage, right? So whilst others like don't even bother looking in their CRM because it's like maybe even like just not like clean and sorted and stuff like that.
Right.
So and now you can even with unsorted, unstructured data, you just try to use the AI and it makes sense of it. So
for me, it's exciting because I think one of the great stresses in life is to look for a job, right? Like it's up there with like dying and public speaking. Like it's like a major life event. It's a major trauma. And I get it right now. And it's the recruiters and sourcers who do the job, they take a lot of pride in their work. But the fact of the matter is they're not humanly capable of doing what's being asked of them. There's no human recruiter that can conduct 500 interviews in a week. Mm. It's just not possible. And it's unfair to ask. And so that's what they're up against. They're really professionals who take a lot of pride in their work, who literally have an impossible task placed in front of them. And that's just the first impossible task that's placed in front of them, right? Like, imagine you walk into a room and somebody gives you a piece of paper and they're like, you have to make a human being appear and do work, actual work, based on me giving you this piece of paper. Like, go find a human. Bye. Good luck. Like, Legend of Zelda stuff, right? Like, that's a quest. So, like, they take it personally when I say things like the AI will help because it can talk to everybody. Oh, yeah. And the common pushback, not only in recruiting, but everywhere, is it's not creative. It's not that smart. It's not there yet. This is denial. It's not just over
because
Burn
in many
Egypt.
Cases it is. So I think that's kind of the deal. Because like I just read a Medium article that was sent to me via email today, talking about a new API which helps parsing documents for better rec retrieval. And I myself had like just yesterday put in like 4 hours to improve our rec pipeline. There is still a way to go. So I'm also curious, honestly, to get
sure.
your book and look on what you've done and how you approached it. Because from just my experience, like processing documents and like unstructured data is possible, but it's also not a small feat. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. We're the very first iterations of this. So like the very first phone screeners and video phone interview systems are coming out today. But the fact of the matter is a human being can't interview that many people. It's just not possible. Mm. And so it becomes unfair because a lot of people who would be really good fits for the job never, ever get seen. You know, it's never even seen. And that's unfortunate. And it's a bad experience for everybody. It's inefficient for the company because they just lost it. You know, they went out looking for that person. That person actually came to them. And because of their inefficiencies in sorting and other things and matching and the inability to tell just from a resume whether somebody's a match against a job description, there's this impasse and it becomes this catch-22 problem. And it's a huge problem. And it costs billions of dollars a year in lost productivity and frustration and all kinds of inefficiencies. I mean, anybody from the logistics industry would have a heart attack looking at the pipelines and recruiting. Like Six Sigma, oh, please forget it. Like, we're not even close. We're not even to One Sigma. So we have a long way to go in the profession. But the technology is here today to automate recruiting. You could take a phone screen. You could take a video interview. There's challenges on that, though, because, you know, when I talk to the testing companies, they say one of the dead giveaways that somebody's using an AI is they score 100% on the coding test. Is that good or bad? Like, you were testing to see what kind of coder you got. If they could produce code that's 100% passable on a test, isn't that what you're really after? Like, I don't know. Yeah.
The
industry hasn't decided.
Harder.
Right. The industry hasn't decided what the answer to that is yet. Some companies are like, oh, that's the person we want. They're innovative. They're forward-thinking.
Yeah,
they're using the tools. And others are like, they're cheating.
Yeah, if someone's just doing 100% coding, a thing is, what you want is how people like what you want is when you hire a programmer is a problem solver. So you don't want someone who writes 100% code for that. Like, okay, that's fine, but how does he behave if the code doesn't work 100%? And how does he approach that? And that's also something a lot of the AI coder questions, which I mentioned earlier, yep. I had in there, like, and describe what your biggest problem was doing that, and how did you solve it? And so, like, and that yeah. I get because, like, no one needs a coding monkey. So if you can write 100% code, so good for you. So but what if the code breaks? And that's also the thing with low-code solutions oftentimes. Like, what if it breaks? Like,
and what I'm thinking of yeah. next is, like, next week I'll be, or week after, I'll be recording my own avatar. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what's prevent me from hooking it up to a software engineering backend and sending my avatar out on interviews, right? Yeah, like,
of course.
This is something. So we have a lot to think about in the field when it comes to interviewing and validating skills. This is actually a big challenge in recruiting today. And AI is actually not being used here, which is kind of ironic, to be really thoughtful on this particular challenge, because it's going to become increasingly hard to validate skills over a phone interview or a video interview when more and more people have access to mm-hmm. an LLM that can take the transcript and run a search and answer the question, right? Yeah. So we're in a period right now where we don't really have a good solution, but we need to rethink the interview process.
Can I ask maybe a last question before we part? We're about time for sure. A controversial one. So I want you to make it a good one. So do you think, in your perspective, can a recruiter be fully automated? Or are there still human tasks that could not be delegated to AI?
Right. So the question to answer technically, the technical answer is yes. Now, here's the thing about my reading of the law. You cannot reject a candidate with an AI. GDPR is explicit, more and more candidate. Mm. But there's no law anywhere saying you can't hire one with it. So yes can come from an AI. So I'm not saying that people want that. Although if you're saying you're a technology company, your AI recruiter extends you the offer, that's us using, right? So maybe that in the right market, that actually works. Technically, it is feasible to automate end-to-end recruiting today with AI systems and to never have a recruiter talk to a human being and get them an offer. That is technically possible. Legally, it is challenging at the moment because you're going to have to justify yes-no decisions. However, most recruiters have very little authority over yes-no decision. They're a gatekeeper. Mm. They'll interview somebody and pass them on, but mm-hmm. there's a ratio. A good recruiter will have 80% acceptance rates, which means 20% of the people they think should be interviewed don't get interviewed. So they don't even have really decision-making ability in the process to begin with, to have it taken away from them. Mm-hmm. This is something that is unnerving to them as a profession, because then where's the value add? And this is why I've been trying to get us to be data driven for so long, is we have to become the business advisors and say, well, unemployment is this rate and salaries are this rate, and here's what our competitors are paying, right? And advise them, because that's the information they won't have. Mm-hmm. That's what they need to get from the recruiter. They are no longer going to need whether this person's technically qualified or not. The AI is better at qualifying candidates than recruiters are, because I was a tech recruiter. I was never a software engineer. The AI is going to be better at evaluating a software engineer than I am.
I think where the dangerous thing is, and Edgar probably has a lot more knowledge on this from maybe a technical perspective, but these systems have been more recently exploited more through kind of reverse prompting. I don't know what the right terminology it is, but in the last couple of days, I also read about OpenAI being exploited again. And people calling them out, like, oh, you know, OpenAI is acting out funky again. So I'm just kind of relating it back to here. Could candidates also exploit these chatbots to negotiate themselves like an unrealistic, you know, kind of salary or benefits with AI? Because there's no human common sense, I think, Edgar, as you mentioned, to kind of level set the expectations.
Yeah, decisioning will still, and that's where I think humans, the no call. I think the human will still extend the offer. I think that's still what most people want. But the decision to say no has to still come from a human. on any level on any of this for the moment. So I don't think it's going to be the AI rejecting you at a stage, or you could reverse engineer it into giving you better benefits, because it can't sign the benefits package at the end of the day. The offer letter will still be signed and approved by a human for now. 5 years from now, however, I wouldn't be surprised if that's like a like Superman 3.14 is them reverse hack, you know, like how we did the banks with the pennies. Like he'll do the GPTs and then he'll get the reverse. Anyway, it'll be something like that, just the AI version.
The thing
heist. But yeah.
All the systems, AI is not like even like RabbitMQ, like with a large action model and stuff like that. Like, that's not really what happens in the background. Like,
right,
it takes out, and then the software has to work on it. So, if you don't know the underlying APIs and what they how they work, and you should do all this stuff on the back end, please, developers out there, like, don't do it on the front end. And having that said, it's like you. Of course, you can exploit it, and then the answer is broken, and then the whole system breaks. So that's get you far.
Take reasonable precautions.
Yeah. So if you use normal security standards as you should, and you also try to break it before you release it, that should prevent a lot of stuff. I'm not saying that's not exploitable. Like Mike said, we shouldn't do the yes no decision if like accepting on an offer, or me honestly even sending the offer. Should all already have some human intervention in it, because as soon as there's money involved and numbers, I think someone has to make sense of it. But it's also, I don't know, I think everything we do today as service, as like mostly getting information, structure it and evaluating it, will all be replaced by AI. And using a human for it will be just the expensive path, like for the rich and wealthy. Like today, if you go shopping to IKEA, like you barely get someone to explain you anything. Whilst if you go like an expensive store, you have like your personal assistant explaining you everything about the sofa. So I think that's kind of where this will go as well. Cautious, like with every AI system, be cautious.
Yeah.
I actually ended on a high note here. This is something, because there are caution is wise. But I was just watching a TED talk from Mustafa Suleiman, who's the CEO of Microsoft AI. And I had to pause it, rewind it, and catch this word for word, because I thought this was amazing. He said, AI is to the mind what nuclear fission is to energy, limitless, abundant, and world-changing.
Yeah, it is.
Very optimistic.
I would love before we are out of time, but I would love for you, Mike, to at least give us some hints. Like we mentioned your book, the book will be linked on the YouTube video. I'm not sure how we can do it on the podcast, but I'll figure this out. Okay. Is there anything...
a title of your book? Can you mention the title of your book?
It's The AI Recruiter is the title of my book, Revolutionizing Hiring with Advanced GPT-Powered Prompts. And then I also have recruitingclasses.com, which is where I train.
Nice. And then I think you also mentioned you have a GPT in the GPT store.
In the GPT store, it is called the AI Recruiter, and it's a purple squirrel. Okay. And anybody who has access to the GPT store can use my AI Recruiter for free.
I think you should give it a chance, because, again, Mike was... very nice to show us some kind of demo how it works. I think it's really impressive, and he invested quite some time to improve it and get it to a quality where he's happy and he's actually used it in his previous roles. So I definitely think you should give it a try.
I would just, because like I find it so interesting, especially like for startups and young companies, recruiting is hell. What would you suggest, like, startups, young companies, small companies, they want to hire? Like I have one friend of mine, he just like hired three more people. Like he's hired like 10 people in the last 3 months from two starting. Like how would you approach an AI recruiting from like a young company's perspective? Like, just maybe you can give like some hints.
Well, besides hiring me for consulting, teaching you how to do it. It's a matter of tools. Sourcing is challenging. LinkedIn is limited, especially for startups. There's Seekout. They work with small companies. They're like $160 a month for small companies. They have a license. So you only need one. That'll give you access to the database because you're not going to come with one. You're not going to have a database. I would start to use them. They have some AI-powered tools to help you with sourcing.
How's their name again?
Seekout.
Seekout, okay.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, they're really good on the front end. And then they would be a CRM, either something like HireEasy or HireSuite. They're AI-powered. This is nice for our profession is actually a lot of the tools are AI-powered and they're available at subscriptions like $150, $160 a month a seat, which for a startup is very affordable. And you typically only need one as a startup. So you can get, an AI recruiter, a sourcer, and a CRM for about $350, $400 a month. If you're going to be doing recruiting and you're using AI, that's probably the way to start. It's low investment. It's not super intense. It's all SaaS. So mm-hmm. It's not like implementation unless you want to do API implementations. And those are becoming more and more simple, right, and straightforward to do. So those would be my suggestions to start with.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. I love that you got that one in before we part. Again, thank you, Mike, for all the valuable lessons. I haven't been this close to the recruiting space, so I definitely learned a lot. Thank you for taking the time and sharing your knowledge, expertise with our audience. So any parting thoughts from you, Edgar or Mike?
Yeah, from my side, thank you very much. It was really insightful. I'm really looking forward to look at this because, like I said, It's a hard challenge for every company out there, and even harder is, I think, because getting on StepStone, getting your stuff on StepStone is so expensive. So having any alternative is really welcome. Thank you very much. It was really insightful. Also for all you out there listening, please take this example. If you build AI solutions, try to start where it's most effective and takes away mundane administrative tasks, where it involves language understanding. If you go in with that mindset, you will pretty soon get really great results and see what AI can do for you. Thank you very much. Last words from Mike.
Thank you for having me. I hope this was insightful. For those of you who are yet to get started, I guess my last parting advice would be, ask it a question you never got a good answer to when you were a kid. Why is the sky really blue? Why is the grass really green? Something you never really fully got your hand around. And just start having a conversation with it. Treat it like you would a text conversation with somebody who's, extremely well-educated and can talk to you about any subject.
Awesome advice.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
Thanks, everyone.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.